you've read and heard from all the others. Now, the real story on today's biggest topics. The Lisa Wexler Show on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
And welcome back to the Lisa Wexler Show as we navigate 203-333-9422, how we are going to be coming out of COVID these last 2 years. I think that many people believe that this insistence on having to be at a desk or be in an office every day is going to be looking increasingly like a dinosaur thing of the past. Well, as we were coming out of this, but still in the middle, frankly, of Omicron, Connecticut employees brought their issue to the forefront in the negotiating table with the state of Connecticut. And an arbitrator decided on this balance. Dan Haar, who is an editor and a columnist for the Connecticut Insider and the Hearst publications, which cover everything from the Connecticut Post all the way down to the Stanford Advocate, the Greenwich Time, and the Westport News, joins us now because he wrote a piece that the ruling may let Connecticut state employees work from home more often, but not everyone is on board. Dan, welcome back to the show and good morning.
Thank you very much. Great to be here. Don't forget the New Haven Register, too.
And the New Haven Register. So, you know, I can't remember them all, Dan. What can I tell you?
That's actually the biggest one by circulation, I think. I'm not sure I'm allowed to say that, but I think it is. In any case, yes, it's quite an issue. Working from home is a good thing until it gets to be so much that you lose the sense of teamwork. And whether that's going to happen or not remains to be seen. But the arbitration ruling certainly does what you said it did.
Can you tell us a little bit, how did the arbitration ruling come to be arbitrated? In other words, tell us what happened here.
Yes, I'm going to give 45 seconds or 30 seconds of quick history. This has nothing whatsoever to do with the recently concluded negotiations for a new state employee contract. This was a separate track. This started in 2017 with the last contract, the previous contract with state employees, with previous governor, former governor Malloy. And in that contract, it stated that working from home is a bargainable right. That is, it's not something that the state can just say, here's your rules. That contract gave state employees in the executive branch, and it's going to be a benchmark for all state employees, including judicial, legislative, and higher ed, the right to bargain for working from home. And so that contract said, go reach an agreement. And they, of course, as happens, they did not reach an agreement. They came close by 2019, but there were still some open issues. And then something happened that changed the way we think about working from home. What was it? Yes, COVID.
yes.
I couldn't quite think of it. And so once COVID happened, the state, which had been saying to its employees, no, it will not work if you work from home a majority of the time, on March 19th, 2020, as we all know, sent people home from the state, anyone who could work from home, who was not customer-facing, and even many who were, go home and stay home for 2 months. And that's what we did. And we, of course, never came back, either in our private offices or our state employee offices. We never fully came back. And the arbitrator's ruling of December 27th essentially took the new protocols of COVID and applied them permanently to the way it is. And the specific thing that they did was they said the Lamont administration wanted each agency head, typically commissioners, but there are offices within departments, that kind of thing, to set a cap. So, for example, the Lisa Wexler Show, the executive producer may say, you have to be here 50% of the time. And the arbitrator said, no, there can be no caps. The only cap is 20% you can't grieve a decision by a commissioner who says you have to be here one day out of five. And so that's become the norm. That's really what state employees are doing. They're working from home 80% of the time.
Talk to me a little bit about arbitration. Was there only one arbitrator as opposed to three?
Yes. I don't know the ins and outs of when there is a panel of three and when there's one. But in this case, there was one arbitrator by the name of Richie, R-I-C-C-I. I think it was Michael. not a gentleman I've heard of, but an arbitrator. And he was picked by both sides, and he was the arbitrator. And as often happens, both sides are a little bit off from where you'd ideally want to be with their last best offer. And that's the way it went.
And did either side indicate that they wanted to appeal the decision?
I don't know that it is appealable. It is negotiable.
Okay.
Is an arbitration ruling? I guess you can appeal in court, but you're going to lose.
These kind of decisions are only appealable on procedural grounds, not substantive, which is why most of the time they're not appealed.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yes, it is possible, but that the state could appeal the arbitration ruling. But two things would happen. One is that they would really tick off 49,000 state employees, and two is they would gain nothing from that because they would lose. Politically, they would have a nightmare. And the commissioners that I've talked with have just said we're going to live with it.
Tell me about that. Tell me who you spoke to. We're chatting with Dan Haar, and we're talking about the fact that 80% of the time now, it's possible that state employees are going to be able to work from home. So Dan, tell me about how the commissioners are thinking about this, because I would say, just taking a devil's advocate point of view, it just strikes me that the decision was made in the middle of COVID, but a lot of people are now, you see this, reconsidering the aspects of not going into the office for the overall work culture and mentoring young employees.
Yes, I agree. I'm personally, I'm tired of staring into my next door neighbor's kitchen window all day, although it's a nice view of the backyard. I like a hybrid mix, and I think we're coming out of COVID. A lot of us think that something close to a blend is the best way to go. The core question is, the arbitrator seems to be saying, if you read either between the lines or read very carefully, that, well, let me go back a step. There is a set of agreements about what can and can't be work from home. There is an agreement, and the arbitrator is saying that we still have to stick to that agreement. It's not that every employee can automatically work from home 80% of the time. The question is, there's phrasing like efficient and best way to do your job and things like that, right? And if there's a business need for a state employee to be in the office, the state employee must be in the office. The question is, how do you define that need? And that's where I've talked to commissioners, and they believe that Commissioner Gilletti specifically, I didn't talk with him, but I read his very long letter to employees after the decision, in which he said, we're going to try and get the best of both worlds. We're going to try and get people coming in and being a team and being together, and we're going to try and get that home-work balance that comes from being able to work at home more often than you were in the past. That is exactly what the arbitrator seems to be disallowing. That is, the purpose of coming into the office for team building is not enough. You need to be in the office. A commissioner can compel you to be in the office only for specific tasks, right? And again, this isn't written in stone. This is an interpretation that seems to be emerging from the arbitrator's ruling of December 27th.
Now, you said, we're chatting with Dan Haar about this. You said, Dan, that that this is based on a 2017 contract. Do these rulings extend in perpetuity to the relationship between the employees and the state, which is the employer, or do they sunset and are they then superseded by another contract?
In 2027, the agreement over benefits runs out. That was the controversial. You may recall in 2017, it was set to run out, and they gave 10 more years of benefits, but they lowered the benefits. They created a new tier four. And some people opposed that and said, oh, we should have been much tougher and stricter with them. I'm not sure this runs out in 2027, but the contract reopens in 2027.
So in 2027, which is plenty of time away, there's an opportunity to look back and see how this has actually worked for the state of Connecticut.
Well, yeah, except that, as you know, a right once conferred is difficult to bring back in.
Yeah.
Right, as you well know, and that applies both to taxes, tax breaks. It applies to just about everything in public life. It would be extremely difficult if we see 5 years of 80-20 as a rule for the state to bring that back in, because technology is only going to get better.
Yeah, to me, it's such a it's really a fascinating cultural turning point right now. It's not only happening in the state of Connecticut. It's happening, obviously, with private employers everywhere. And I, had the benefit of looking back over a 30-plus year career and saying to myself that I could not have become the professional that I am without absorbing all of the absorbing the way in which my mentors and people older than I was and colleagues did the job that I was training to do. I could not have learned to do my jobs by myself at home. I could have done the specific task, Dan, don't get me wrong. I could have written a brief, or I could have, done a closing, but I couldn't have overall become the professional that I am without absorbing everything else about being at work.
I'll go you a step further. I couldn't have become what I'm doing right now if I weren't compelled to work illegal hours over 40 hours a week when I was an hourly employee in mm-hmm. the newspaper industry, which was obviously rife with those labor violations and no longer is.
Uh-huh.
And so it's much more difficult frankly, it was a lot easier to train people when we were working 80 hours a week. Half
yes.
of that without pay.
Yes.
I know that's a sensitive issue that I probably shouldn't bring up, but I bring it up because what I'm saying is that the world changes. And today's young reporters are working the hours that we pay them for, and that's proper and right, and that's the way it should be. But it becomes more difficult to bring people along, and this is exactly the same thing, except it's in reverse. We are following a legal regime of working from home, and we're just going to have to live with that. And it has advantages, by the way. It has big advantages, right? Because I worked in an office 100% of the time until December of 2014, when my previous employer, I had a big project due. And in that big project, I wrote 13,000 words on the history of innovation in Connecticut. 13,000 words. It was 10 chapters. That's a lot of words. It's like a quarter of a book. And I did it. I read 30 books, and I interviewed 45 people, and I wrote the entire 13,000 words from home, the seat where I'm sitting right now in West Hartford, in 5 weeks.
Hmm.
So at the end of that 5 weeks, I got the job done by focusing completely on that one task, no chattering in the office. And then I said, well, I'm coming back. It's January 1st. I'm done. And he says, and my boss says, why don't you stay home and work from home forever? Because we're getting more work done too here.
Dan, that's funny. That's funny.
So this is not to say that people are goofing off at home.
I'm not saying that either. No, I'm not disputing that people are goofing off. I don't think that people are goofing off. I think the productivity shows people are not goofing off. What I worry about is the law of unintended consequences. I've got kids in their 20s and their early 30s, and I just worry that even if they want to show up to the office, I had brunch with them over Sunday, a bunch of kids, the cousins, younger people in my life. And they were all talking about how they wanted to go back to work, and they'd shown up to work, but nobody else was there. And so they couldn't learn because nobody else was there to learn from.
The office environment is certainly never going to be the same. I think Commissioner Gilletti at the Department of Transportation has a good innovation where he's got all hands Wednesday. Right.
I
and
see.
There are the union people, some union people, some of the employees there resent that. They say, why should we have to come in all at once in one day? And he says, sorry, this is the day. It's all hands Wednesday.
Mm.
And I spoke and at least one day a week, everybody's at their desk. And you're going to get what you got in our childhood, our youth. yours and mine in the, well, I won't say which decades, but certain decades.
Yeah.
And we came of age professionally that way, and he's going to get that. They at DOT are going to get that one day a week. I spoke to another commissioner who I can't name who said, we're going to live with this. And this commissioner said, you know, I like that. I'm stealing that idea. I'm taking all hands Wednesday into my department as well. So that's the way it's going to be, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Dan Hart, thank you so much for joining us. Thanks for shining a light on this. I think it's important for the people of Connecticut to know that this is how we're transitioning the state of government employees. And I just think it's part of a really important conversation now because it's playing out, you know, among all working people in all environments. So thank you very much for coming on today.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be on the air with you.
Thank you. Dan Haar from the Hearst newspaper, Connecticut Insider, all up and down our Gold Coast. We'll be right back in a moment with Matt Mandel, who is the leader of the Chamber of Commerce of Westport, Connecticut. And he wants to focus on a bill pending before the legislature, which is being known as the TOD bill. We'll be right back.